Welcome to the Crime and Hustle Podcast Network. This is Crime and Hustle. Hey everyone, this is Priscilla. I have kind of a puzzler for you today that has me racking my brain, scouring the internet, trying to find an answer that I realistically know probably doesn't exist. This is the story of a 17-year-old girl and the strange and unsettling circumstances that surround her disappearance. The story is very intriguing because there are so many theories that her friends, her family, and coworkers all think happened and where she is. And I have a few ideas myself, yet we still have no definitive answers. So let's just dive right into it. So sit back and let's talk about Brianna Maitland. Brianna Maitland grew up with her parents and an older brother on her parents' farm in East Franklin, Vermont, which is at the top of Vermont, very close to the Canadian border. She went to Missisquoi Valley Union High School before eventually transferring to Enosburg Falls High School in her sophomore year. But when Brianna turned 17, in an effort to grow up way too fast, she really wanted to move away from her parents' farm and gain a sense of her own independence. Her parents claimed that there were no issues at home that would contribute to Brianna wanting to leave the home she grew up in. She just wanted to grow up and be with her friends. And her friends actually attended a different high school, so she eventually transferred schools and ended up living on some friends' couches, kind of bouncing from one person's house to another. The situation was very unstable, and it was hard to predict where she would be sleeping from night to night because she moved around so much. In February of 2004, Brianna decided to just completely drop out of high school altogether and move in with her longtime friend, Jillian Stout, who she had actually known since she was a small child, and Jillian lived in Sheldon, Vermont. Once things kind of became a little bit more stable, she had two jobs that she was working, she had a consistent place to live, so she decided to enroll in a GED program to finish her schooling. On March 19th of 2004, Brianna took her GED exam and passed. She was so excited that she was finally done with high school and for this accomplishment of passing the exam that her and her mom went out to celebrate, getting lunch, going shopping, and running some errands around town together. Her mother claims that they discussed everything from friends to jobs to Brianna eventually enrolling in a college part-time. And her mom said she was very optimistic and in good spirits about the future. When Brianna and her mom were out shopping, they were in a store when all of a sudden, Brianna noticed something outside, and her mom noticed that something kept catching her eye. She kept looking out the window in the parking lot. And she told her mom that she was just going to step outside really fast and that she would come back in just a moment. And she proceeded to exit the store. Her mom ended up not staying in the store for too much longer, so she checked out with her purchases, business as usual, and met back up with Brianna in the parking lot. And her mother recalls her seeming noticeably disturbed, shaken up, agitated, which she classifies as being very random and out of nowhere given the situation, especially after the very relaxing, chill, fun day they just had celebrating her completing the GED exam. Brianna didn't offer any information as to what happened or what she was doing in the parking lot, so she told her mother that she needed to go home to get ready for her next shift that she had coming up at the Black Lantern Inn, which was a restaurant that she worked at in Montgomery, Vermont. Her mother didn't want to overstep any boundaries and upset Brianna by prying too much into her personal business, so she never asked her what made her so agitated and upset, which was a decision that she would soon come to regret. She dropped Brianna off at the Stouts' home where she was staying between 3:30 p.m. and 4 p.m., not knowing that this was going to be the last time that she ever laid eyes on her daughter. Brianna entered the Stouts' home and got ready for work as she normally did. She was the only one there at the time, and before she left for her shift, she left a little note on the kitchen counter telling her friend that she had left for work and that she was going to be back when her shift was over. Then she left for the Black Lantern Inn in her pale green, four-door, 1985 Oldsmobile sedan. Brianna arrived at work, completed her shift, and clocked out at 11:20 p.m. On March 20th, which is the next day, a state trooper was called to an abandoned house on Route 118 in Richford, Vermont, which was located about 1 mile from the Black Lantern Inn. When the trooper arrived at the scene, he noticed a 1985 Oldsmobile sedan that was actually backed into the side of the abandoned house. And the abandoned house is known by the locals as the Dutchburn House. The car sustained minor damages, but it actually punctured a hole in the wall of the house. And there will be a photo of the house with the abandoned vehicle up on our Facebook page and Instagram, where you will be able to check that out along with all the other photos from this episode. And what you will see is the house, which very closely resembles a rundown old barn, sits very close to the road with a big field behind it bordered with extremely thick woods. The tail of the vehicle apparently had crashed into the side corner of the house, and some of the siding was actually knocked off by the tail of the vehicle, and plywood that was previously nailed onto the windows was laying over the trunk of the car. In the front seat of the vehicle, the trooper found two of Brianna's uncashed paychecks. They also found her clothing, her medication, her driver's license, her makeup, her contact lenses, and her glasses. The trooper also found a woman's fleece jacket that was in the field near Brianna's car, but they found that it had apparently not belonged to Brianna, although I don't find anything as far as an explanation goes as to where they got that conclusion. So my best guess here is that maybe her parents just didn't recognize the jacket, so they said that it wasn't hers. The troopers did not initially report the car to the car's registered owner, which was Brianna's mother. They instead noticed Brianna's paychecks inside the vehicle and where they were from, and they guessed that she was the primary driver, so they actually went to her place of work trying to find her to tell her about the car. But of course, she wasn't there. The abandoned Oldsmobile and Brianna's disappearance actually weren't connected until her disappearance was reported 3 days later. So the state trooper that was called to the scene, unable to find Brianna, had a towing company tow the car to a local garage for storage. And given the circumstances of Brianna bouncing around from house to house, probably not calling her parents daily or maybe even regularly for that matter, a number of days actually went by before anyone thought to raise questions as to where Brianna was. And she wasn't reported missing until a few days after the vehicle was recovered by the trooper. And her mother, Kelly, wasn't even notified that her vehicle was even discovered until many days after the fact, even though the car was actually registered to Kelly. And I think we can all agree, given the circumstances of coming across an abandoned vehicle, unable to find the primary driver, having her two paychecks that would tell you where she worked, maybe the person the car is registered to should be notified immediately. But of course, I'm no officer, so I could be wrong here. I just keep thinking about the time that was wasted. I mean, they lost so much valuable time at this point. And the friend that Brianna actually lived with, Jillian Stout, she found the note that was left on the kitchen counter for her shortly after Brianna wrote it and left for work. But then she left to go spend the weekend away. And when she got home from her getaway the following Monday, she found the note still in the same location, noting that it had not been moved and the house had not been disturbed in any way since she left. Jillian thought it was off, but brushed it off and assumed that maybe Brianna decided to go spend the week with her parents back in East Franklin, Vermont, or maybe she decided to go stay with another friend since that was kind of her thing, even though Jillian's house was where she was officially living at the time. But when Brianna still had not shown up the next day, Tuesday, March 23rd, Jillian became a little more alarmed. She had not seen her or even heard from her. No calls, no texts, nothing. So Jillian decided to start calling around to see if anyone had heard from her. She called friends that Brianna had been staying with and hanging around, employers, and she kept getting the same response from everyone. No one had seen or heard from her. Her employer stated that she left work alone on the 19th at 11:30 p.m.-ish and claimed Brianna said that she was going home to get rest for her other job that she was scheduled to work the next morning. Jillian, knowing that Brianna didn't come back to the house, begins to get a little more nervous. She then decided to call Brianna's mother, Kelly, and Jillian, who at this point was still unaware that Brianna's car had actually been located, abandoned at the Dutchburn house, goes to the police and files a missing persons report. Thursday, March 25th, Brianna's parents began giving the police more information, a timeline, pictures, any information that could be helpful in identifying and locating someone who was missing. The trooper then shows her parents what information they had, a photo that completely revolts them. It was a picture of the car they found at the Dutchburn house, and they immediately knew it was Brianna's. They saw the way the car was positioned and how it had rammed into the side of the house and knew that someone else did that, and that Brianna would never have put the car in that position. After Brianna was reported missing and word went out to the public that if anyone knew anything about her disappearance, to say something, to let someone know, that is when some eyewitnesses from the night of her disappearance began coming forward. The first reported sighting was from a man that drove by the house between 11:30 and 12:30 and said the car's headlights were on, but stated he didn't see anyone around the vehicle. And his accounts of these events, he claims, were either on March 19th or March 20th, which we know it was the 19th because of the trooper being called to the scene on the 20th. However, he was adamant that he was unsure what day it was. The second man reported that he drove by the Dutchburn house between 12 a.m. and 12:30 a.m. on the 20th, seeing a turn signal flashing on the car. Another witness, who was actually Brianna's ex-boyfriend, claims that he was driving past the Dutchburn house after being at a party across the border in Canada, and he said that he drove past at 4 a.m. on the 20th and thought that he recognized the car as Brianna's, but he didn't see anyone around the vehicle. And finally, some people driving past the Dutchburn house around 10 a.m. on the 21st stated they thought the scene was very odd and out of place. So odd, in fact, that they actually stopped at the scene to take pictures of it, noting that they found change, a water bottle, and even a shiny piece of jewelry that they stated was either a necklace or a bracelet sitting beside the vehicle. Police and hundreds of volunteers conduct a search party and they sweep the area around the Dutchburn house with search dogs, but they found nothing. And in search parties, if they find a hair bow or a shoe, that is considered finding something. And here they found nothing. The state's crime lab processed the vehicle for evidence on March 30th at the garage it was hauled to for storage, but was eventually returned back to the family. And since the car was hauled off from the scene and taken to the garage without any precaution for the preservation of evidence, it is unclear if any attempt at gaining DNA evidence was even successful. And I can't seem to find any reports that anything usable was ever extracted from the vehicle. This is when Brianna's father, who was away working in New York at the time of her disappearance, noticed that Brianna's ATM card, her glasses, contacts, migraine medication, were all left inside the vehicle, and he knew that something more had to have happened that night. Law enforcement began to assess the possibility that foul play was likely involved in her disappearance. And this is when the Vermont police began receiving some very peculiar tips on the anonymous tip line set up for this case. One tip in particular claimed that Brianna was being held against her will in a house about 10 miles from Montgomery, Vermont, where she worked. The police went and raided the residence on April 15th, hoping that they would find Brianna safe. Instead, all they found was drug paraphernalia, large amounts of cocaine and marijuana, and nothing else. Brianna was not there. There were two men, Ryan and Jackson, who actually rented the house, who were very well-known drug dealers from New York, who were arrested for the drugs found inside the residence. And after police talked with many of Brianna's close friends and coworkers, they discovered that Brianna had a past of experimenting with hard drugs and actually knew the two men who rented the house because they would occasionally supply her with cocaine. Her parents maintained that their daughter was not seriously involved with drugs, and drugs were not a factor in her disappearance. Even though Montgomery, Vermont had a very heavy drug presence at the time of her disappearance. Later on, the police received another call from an anonymous older female who stated that Ryan and Jackson had kidnapped and murdered Brianna. The woman even signed an affidavit that outlines the gruesome and horribly graphic details in which she claimed Brianna was murdered and alleged that it happened about a week after she disappeared. The affidavit stated that there was an argument over money between Brianna and Ryan that Ryan lent her to purchase cocaine. So he kidnapped her and stored her in the basement of a woman's house who was recently incarcerated. Once Brianna was murdered, she was allegedly dismembered with a table saw, and her remains were disposed of on a nearby pig farm to ensure no trace of her could ever be found. The allegations alleged in the affidavit were never corroborated by authorities, even though there was actually a pig farm that was very close by. And there is no evidence that Ryan and Jackson were even considered to be actual suspects in this case, even though two separate calls from the tip line placed them and Brianna in the same scenario. I also find no further mention of them anywhere else in her file. Maybe the police held something back from the public, and maybe they knew they couldn't be the real assailants, or maybe this is just an oversight, but my gut feeling is I definitely need to know more about these two. The tip line actually remained active, and other calls were received by people claiming that she was tied to a tree in the woods or that she had been tied up and thrown into the lake, but those also went uncorroborated, and authorities figured that those were likely from people who were trying to play on vulnerable people's emotions at times like this, which is absolutely disgusting. And this is where things get a little ridiculous. The case was only being investigated for the first few months following her disappearance, and here is the reason. The police began to think that there wasn't any foul play involved, so they treated it more like a runaway situation. And this is huge. This is also where one of my personal PSAs come in. The Vermont police believe that they had reason to think that Brianna was more likely a runaway, given her history of leaving home at a very early age, dropping out of high school, bouncing from one friend's house to another, and so on. The investigation process for a runaway is very different than that of investigating a missing persons case. The biggest notable difference is the urgency put into a missing persons case, where there isn't as much urgency in a runaway case, and the same goes for publicity. Missing persons are blasted everywhere in hopes that the public can locate the person, even back in 2004. While runaway cases have to meet a set of laid out conditions before any information is even released to the public. So never settle for a case being considered a runaway. Authorities will often use this if they have a history of a person running away or has circumstances that match those of Brianna. But if that person is missing, it needs to be a full missing persons investigation. It is hard to say if the time spent in this case thinking that she was a runaway helped the case run cold or not. Precious time was lost in the search for her, and the case went cold. A couple of years later, in 2006, there was security footage at a casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, that showed a woman that very closely resembled Brianna, casually sitting at a poker table. But the woman was never questioned or properly identified, so That lead also ran cold, and we have a photo of this woman sitting at that poker table. Of course, it's from the overhead security camera, so the angle is a little weird, but what you will see is she has the same forehead, the same bone structure, and the same nose. She pretty much has the same hair part and the same hair, so it is very similar to Brianna. In 2007, over 3 years after the disappearance, the FBI concluded that Brianna's car was probably staged at the scene to look like an accident, and theories began flying around, and Brianna's parents stated in a public record that it would have taken more than one suspect to subdue Brianna. See, Brianna was a well-trained martial artist, and they concluded that there was absolutely no way one person would have been able to overpower her with the skills that she possessed in jiu-jitsu. The state's crime lab was able to pull DNA samples from the vehicle, but those results were never even made public, and we still don't know what those results state to this day or if they were even usable. Now, many theories surround this disappearance, and some of them take us back to about 3 weeks before she went missing. Brianna attended a party with her friends, where she was physically attacked by a former friend of hers named Keely LaCrosse. Brianna's father actually believes that the fight was over Brianna talking with a particular boy at the party, and his girlfriend at the time, Keely, was jealous over that interaction. But the actual motive is still not clear. One of her friends who was there for the altercation said that Brianna refused to use any of her martial arts training in a fight with Keely, who ended up actually hitting her in the face several times while she was sitting in a truck, breaking her nose, and even giving her a concussion. Brianna did file charges against Keely for the incident, but they were ultimately dropped a few weeks after Brianna's disappearance against the objection of Brianna's parents. And initially, Brianna's family believed that Keely could be involved in the disappearance, but she was later cleared, although authorities didn't give an exact reason as to why, and I can't seem to find any kind of documentation as to why exactly she was cleared. So from the outside looking in, we see the grudge and potentially an opportunity to finish what she started with Brianna, but why would Brianna not use her martial arts training in a moment like this where she was fighting for her life? And just a side note here, I was once in my day a black belt martial artist as well, and can understand not using your training in a one-on-one fight at a party like Brianna refused to do in her previous altercation with Keely, but if it was life or death, that's the time to use everything you've got. Unless her parents' theory was correct and there was more than one assailant, or she was being threatened with a weapon. The family also suggests that Brianna may have been ambushed when she was driving past the Dutchburn house, and when the assailant took control of the vehicle, they tried to move it but accidentally threw it in reverse instead of drive, and that's the reason that it's backed into the side of the house. But this too is just one of the many possible theories. The most popular theory among those who have looked very deep into this case is that Brianna actually did owe someone a large sum of money that is potentially drug related, and this is supported by the evidence that her friends and family recall the people that she hung around with as being ultimately a bad crowd. And it's believed that when she and her mom were out shopping the afternoon of her disappearance, the thing that caught her eye outside the store was a person that she owed money to, more specifically drug money. But that doesn't explain why Brianna would go outside and meet that person if she owed them money, unless they had been trying to intimidate her, or by stalking her or threatening her, and maybe she saw that as an opportunity to confront them, since she wasn't alone at that moment. She was with her mother, who would soon be exiting the store and meeting back up with her. Brianna more than likely confronted the person about the money, probably trying to get more time to pay, but they wouldn't back down. And by the time her mother exited the store, the person was gone. But if you recall, her mother stated that she was visibly shaken up and agitated, which kind of suggests that maybe she was threatened with violence, and maybe she had some kind of knowledge that she was in big trouble. This could also explain the note that she left Jillian on the kitchen counter, telling her that she was leaving for work but would be back when she was done. I mean, she lived there, so one would assume that that is where she would typically go when she gets off work, right? Did she always leave a note like this when she went to work? Why was this day the day to do that? Unless she knew that there was a chance she would not make it home. The theories continue that after she finished her shift at the Black Lantern Inn, she told her coworkers that she was going home to get rest for her other job the next morning, and she got in her car and left, alone. But what if she wasn't alone? She only appeared that way. And even saying this out loud is creeping me out. This is one of my biggest fears, and I'm always so extremely paranoid about this. But what if someone was actually hiding between the seats in the floorboard of the vehicle, waiting for her to start driving down the road? The crime rate for that area wasn't very high, especially when compared to the national average. So it's not crazy to think that she may have left her car unlocked on occasion. Plus, she also had an older vehicle that was probably a little easier to break into. So she got off work at 11:20 p.m., almost midnight, in the pitch black dark of night. Who would notice if someone really was there? And this is why you always check your back seats before getting in your car, day or night. But if this story is true, the assailant could have surprised her with a weapon, or maybe she was hit from behind. Maybe this struggle ensued around the bend in the road in front of the Dutchburn house, which would explain why the vehicle's tail crashed into the side of the house. And if you recall, there were witness statements that said they saw the headlights and a blinker, but no people around. If the car was actually parked in this manner, I am likely to believe that the assailant would turn off the headlights and blinker as to not attract attention. But here they were left on, not to mention there was no turn in the road that a blinker would be used for, so that for sure would attract some attention. It is plausible that Brianna was either forced or drugged out of the car somehow, leaving her personal items and taken into the woods or potentially picked up by another vehicle trailing behind, which would only reiterate the theory that there were two assailants. In the woods behind the field of the Dutchburn house, there was a river called the Trout River that was about 500 yards away from the scene. And some were led to believe that she was taken there and shot, and then her body disposed of in the river. Although this is a less likely theory, as her body surely would have surfaced and been discovered by now, being many years later. Or maybe she was buried out in the woods somewhere. But that would also mean the assailant would not only have to manage Brianna in some way, either carrying her, dragging her, forcing her to walk without trying to escape, or using martial arts to defend herself, all while carrying supplies needed to bury a body, like a shovel. And it is unlikely that they would be able to manage all of that at one time. There is also a connection that links this case to that of other missing women, namely Mara Murray and Jody Whitney. The fact that Mara Murray went missing on February 9th, 2004, Brianna on March 19th, 2004, and Jody Whitney on May 27th, 2004. And all three of the women's vehicles were discovered abandoned near barns. And to make the situation weirder, Mara Murray was in the Massachusetts area, Brianna in Vermont, and Jody in Vermont. And all of this was around the time of serial killer Israel Keyes' spree through the United States, abducting and killing women in the most heinous ways. A little bit about Israel Keyes is he actually had no specific type of victim. He went for easy prey, and what he would do is actually travel through the United States, planning out his kills in advance. So he would go and actually plant these little underground buckets that he would store his murder kits for whenever he was back in town and was ready to use it. And he went everywhere, all the way from Alaska to California, to New York, to even Mobile, Alabama. And when he was finally caught, he stated that no one would ever know of his victims unless he told them. All of his victims were considered missing persons, not homicides. And it wasn't until he actually confessed to killing these victims that their cases were actually closed. Israel Keyes actually confessed to murdering many missing women, but police suspect that he actually murdered many more than he confessed to. The FBI investigated Keyes as a potential suspect for this abduction, but he was reportedly elsewhere at the time of Brianna's disappearance. So the FBI finds this theory very unlikely that he would have done this with Brianna, but that theory is not entirely ruled out. Now let's explore the theory of her actually running away. Her friends stated that she had mentioned to them plans of possibly making a short trip out of the area, and she was actually known as being very independent and a restless young woman who was unhappy in her rural surroundings, and she had a history of running away before. But that leaves me with a couple of questions. Why wouldn't she at least cash the checks that she had in her vehicle? That would give her a little bit of cash in her pocket. I can understand leaving the debit card as to not leave a paper trail if she really was trying to walk away from her life. But she also left her glasses and contacts, which I'm assuming she needed. She also left that note for her friend, Jillian, saying that she would be back after work. Why would she do that if she is trying to walk away from her life? Why would she give them the idea that she is in fact coming back? That would only raise panic and suspicion when she never shows up. And the biggest thing is her car was found about 1 mile from where she got off work from, the Black Lantern Inn. If she was going to run away, wouldn't she go further than 1 mile before she abandoned ship and left her car out in the open to be discovered? And that doesn't explain why she would leave the headlights and a blinker on, as that would only raise suspicion even more, just as it did to those people who drove by the scene the next morning and actually stopped to take pictures because they found it so out of place. There were multiple factors that led to Brianna not being reported missing and not being of immediate concern when she finally was that come into play here. The main factors were the fact that she did not live at home and rather bounced around from friend to friend, so no one knew exactly when to expect her. Another was the fact that her vehicle was not registered in her name. As was the case here, the car wasn't reported missing to the registered owner, her mother, for a few days after it was discovered abandoned. And some of the other factors were that she didn't have another shift at the Black Lantern Inn scheduled until a few days from her last shift. And her friend being out of town, not being aware that she hadn't been home the entire weekend. And I really do believe that all of these are very understandable in this case, sadly. And although it has been over 15 years since her disappearance, she still has not been located. Her family continues to search for her tirelessly, refusing to believe that she is anything but alive and well. The Vermont State Police stated that they still do have a detective that is investigating this case, but they are more or less counting on someone coming forward that is willing to disclose the events of that night after all these years. But nothing that has come in has come close to giving anyone any answers of what happened to Brianna. And the truth is, that probably won't ever be the case. TV and movies has people believing that a person must be missing for at least 24 hours before being reported missing, and that simply is not the case. There is no time limit, and if you believe someone to be missing or believe someone's life might be in danger, do not wait. Valuable time was lost in Brianna's case by losing almost a full week between her disappearance and people looking for her. And literally anything could have happened in that week. Brianna would be 33 years old right now. And while we hope she is one day located, we must accept that it is likely we will never know. At the time of her disappearance, Brianna was between 5'3 and 5'5. 105 pounds to 118 pounds, with brown hair and hazel eyes. She had a little scar extending from her left eyebrow to her forehead. Her left nostril was pierced, and she wore either a small stud or a ring at the time of her disappearance. Anyone with information is asked to contact the Vermont State Police at 802-524-5993 or submit an anonymous tip at www.vtips.info. So, what do you think happened to Brianna on that night? Could that have been her in the casino in Atlantic City? What are some of your theories? There are so many what ifs, and this case has been cold for so many years. Brianna's father, Bruce, has started a nonprofit that helps other families try to locate their missing loved ones through private investigations called investigationsforthemissing.org. Join the discussion about this case on Facebook or Instagram at Crime and Hustle, where you can see photos of Brianna and the scene where her car was located, as well as a link to her father's nonprofit. And one last thing, if you're interested in checking out any other new shows, Crime and Hustle Podcast Network is launching another new show called Review the Blue Podcast. It's hosted by two hilarious guys that give unbiased reviews of viral videos of law enforcement and first responders, launching July 6th. As for now, I will see you next week with a brand new episode.